The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
So let me say good afternoon one time to our lunchtime. Dr. Brittany Dean, how was your weekend?
Good afternoon, Bees. My weekend was great, and I hope everybody had a nice, restful weekend where they recovered from anything that they had going on last week. And of course, this week we have a great three shows. So, you know, we'll get into it. But while we are talking about a specific topic today, I hope everybody feels free to call in, send their messages, and we can have a conversation on any of your medical topics.
All right, folks, so we're getting into your topic in just a short while. And of course, we will be taking a break shortly to ask any of your medical questions. So we are talking today about the metabolic syndrome. Right, what exactly is metabolic syndrome?
So metabolic syndrome is not actually a disease, but really and truly, it's a cluster of different conditions that occur together, and that really significantly increases a person's risk of developing certain diseases like heart disease, stroke, and even type 2 diabetes. Now, to be diagnosed with metabolic syndrome, a person actually has to meet a certain criteria, and they need to have at least three of the following five to meet this criteria. So an increased waist circumference, and that really just shows that that person has abdominal obesity, high blood pressure, an elevated fasting blood glucose, high triglycerides, and low HDL or low good cholesterol levels. And if we really examine a lot of people who do have heart attacks or strokes, we really see that a lot of them do have this cluster of symptoms. And the syndrome itself reflects a combination of risk factors that often stem from people choosing poor lifestyle habits, particularly when we're looking at their diet and their physical activity or lack of physical activity. And many people mistakenly believe that you need to be overweight to have metabolic syndrome. The truth is that thin individuals can also develop this, especially if you have insulin resistance or carry the fat or the visceral fat around your abdomen. And this syndrome itself is really a red flag that your body's metabolism, and that is the way that it processes and stores energy, is not functioning optimally. And if that is not addressed, then it is going to lead to the serious long-term health issues, like we're seeing the heart attacks and the strokes and much, much more.
All right, so exactly how is it diagnosed?
So the key components that we usually look at, again, would be that abdominal obesity, and that will often be measured by a person's waist circumference. If they have an elevated blood pressure, and that's usually 130 over 85 or higher, or if they're using antihypertensive medications, if they have a high fasting blood glucose, or they're using glucose-lowering medications, if they have elevated triglycerides, sometimes that's 150 milligrams per deciliter or higher, or if they have low HDL or low good cholesterol, or less than 40 milligrams per deciliter in men and less than 50 milligrams per deciliter in women. If they are meeting three or more of these criteria, that usually leads to a diagnosis. So each of these risk factors on its own is concerning, but when they start to appear together, they are going to interact in a certain way that significantly increases a person's cardiovascular and metabolic risk. Now, a key misconception that we usually see is that these risk factors develop independently. Now, in reality, they are often driven by the same shared underlying causes, and that could be insulin resistance. And all of these things are deeply intertwined and interconnected. And that's why when we see somebody with diabetes, we usually see that they do have high cholesterol and high blood pressure as well. So it really is just having all of these comorbidities existing together, and it really plays a big role in affecting your metabolism and putting you at risk for certain diseases.
All right, folks, once again, let me give you the numbers. The numbers, of course, to call in and send your messages. Remember, we're doing it today from Sangeet Studio. If Sangeet people would know the numbers, but I'm doing this for Freedom people and, of course, our friends from Sky Listening. So the WhatsApp numbers are 343-1061. That's 343-1061. Send your messages there. Also, you could call us up at 623-0106. 623-0106. All right, so we continue with our topic. You listen to the Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Brittany Dean. So why is it called syndrome disease?
So the term syndrome is really used because metabolic syndrome represents a collection of different conditions that occur simultaneously rather than a single identifiable disease with one clear cause. Yes, somebody can have diabetes alone without having high blood pressure, or they can have high blood pressure alone, or even high cholesterol alone. But when they occur together, when they're occurring at the same time, then it is a collection of different diseases. And these obviously affect your metabolism in some way or the other. And that is why we refer to it as a syndrome. So it is essentially a constellation of metabolic abnormalities that is going to increase your likelihood of developing more serious conditions like type 2 diabetes or heart disease and even fatty liver disease. So these components, they may have different mechanisms, but they are going to be linked together through common pathways like inflammation, insulin resistance, and oxidative stress on the body. So calling it a syndrome basically emphasizes that it's not just about one lab result or one single symptom. It is a pattern of systemic imbalance. So for patients, it's important to understand that, you know, we're not just treating one part, like taking medications for high blood pressure. That is not going to address the root of the problem. We have to look at your lifestyle changes, because that is going to target the entire metabolic picture that is usually required for having real improvement in your life.
Okay, and how common is the metabolic syndrome in Trinidad and Tobago or the Caribbean region?
So I would say that metabolic syndrome is actually increasingly common in Trinidad and Tobago and even throughout the Caribbean. And of course, that is largely driven by the lifestyle choices we make and even the lifestyle changes that we have been experiencing in the past few years. So things like urbanization, we have more sedentary behavior occurring. And of course, we have now the adoption of westernized diets that is high in the sugar and the salt and the processed foods. Now, the exact figures may actually vary, but studies in the region have shown that approximately 20 to 30% of adults may meet the criteria for metabolic syndrome, with even higher rates in those over age 40 years and older. Now, one of the challenges that we are facing right now is underdiagnosis, especially because a lot of people, they are going to feel normal despite having several abnormal lab values. There's also a cultural tendency to normalize, you know, weight gain, particularly abdominal weight, and that can mask the early signs of the syndrome. So it's important for us to now have these public awareness campaigns, and more routine screenings are going to become more essential, because we need to identify and manage metabolic syndrome early in its course before it progresses to something more fatal like heart disease, heart attacks, diabetes, and any other disease that can result from having these constellation of diseases.
All right, folks, this is where we take a break to ask some of your questions, your personal questions on any medical topic for Lunchtime Doctor to answer. Remember, we're in Sangeet's studio today, so the numbers to WhatsApp, 343-1061, and call us up at 623-0106. So, can I call you on line one? Hello? Oh, line
Hello.
One. Yes, this is line one. Okay. Now getting on to line one. Hello, good afternoon. Hello? All right. Line one, good afternoon. Hello?
Hello?
All right, that person got a cool feed there. Do call us back. I do have a number on the WhatsApp. Hi, good day. I have a son. He is 7, and he has a speech delay. I would like to know if you can help me with a speech doctor for therapy.
I don't have any numbers on hand, but what I can do base is probably just WhatsApp you the name of a doctor, and you could possibly just give it to that person.
All right, no problem. Doctor, I've been reading about fasting. They said it's very good for the body. Maybe fasting 2 or 3 days on water. I really wanted to start, but I tried this morning, starting with water, and by 11 a.m. I was cold sweating and very hungry. What should I do? Should I continue?
So I would avoid fasting with just any water for 3 days. Your body does need a certain amount of carbohydrates or your macronutrients, so the proteins, the carbohydrates, and the fats, etc. So you do need these things to survive on a daily basis. So I really would avoid fasting with water. What can happen is that your blood sugar can drop very low. You can even get muscle loss. You can get electrolyte imbalances. Now, a safe, effective way to fast, if you do not have any underlying medical conditions, you've done all your labs, you know that you are healthy, it's possibly intermittent fasting, which I would always suggest that, you know, you talk to your doctor about, because every individual is different and every individual is going to require different levels of care. So intermittent fasting may be good for some people, but for others, especially those who are diabetics and taking medications to lower their blood sugar, that may actually be very fatal. So fasting is going to be on an individual basis, and this is something that you need to discuss with your doctor, because you have to be cleared to fast in certain regards.
Why is that fasting could be dangerous for diabetics?
So again, if you are a diabetic and you are taking glucose-lowering medications, remember these things send your blood sugar down low or try to normalize it. If you're not getting any sort of carbohydrates within your system and you are already taking these medications, your blood sugar can go below normal and even below safe. And what can happen is that you can get hypoglycemic and, you know, that can be fatal in many regards.
All right. All right, folks, of course, 623-0106 and 343-1061. You're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Right here, we're on Sangeet 106.1 FM, Sky 99.5, and of course, Freedom 106.5 FM. So I'm trying to familiarize myself with the phone lines here, but we'll get to your phone lines in just a short while. Good day, Doctor. Is there any cure for a pinched nerve?
So, the thing with a pinched nerve, it depends on what the actual cause is. So if it is due to, for example, a disc herniation or anything of that sort, then yes, there are surgeries that can help that. However, for persons who have a pinched nerve, you know, physiotherapy might also be beneficial. But yes, there are cures for pinched nerves depending on the cause of the pinched nerve. So if you do suspect that you have a pinched nerve, go and get it checked out. They may do some x-rays. They may do certain MRI examinations on you to find out what the root cause of that pinched nerve is. And if it is something that can be cured or treated, then they will guide you as such.
And are there any, in terms of vitamins you can use or to strengthen your nerves? Anything as nerve strengthening?
So, for certain, in terms of vitamins, you can use B12. That helps with nerve regeneration. That is a good course of action. There are over-the-counter vitamins that does help with nerve symptoms like the pain and the numbness and the tingling. Even vitamin B1, or what we call thiamine, that does help with nerve function and even energy metabolism, and it does protect the nerves from oxidative stress as well. So really and truly, most of the B complex does help with nerve healing and nerve regeneration. That is not to say that that is a cure for pinched nerves. You definitely need to go and get yourself assessed if you do have one.
All right, folks, of course, 6230106. Those are the numbers to call because we're doing it in the Sangeet studios today, just in case you just joined us. And send your WhatsApp messages to 343-1061. We get back to some of your calls and messages in a short while. Are there certain age groups or populations more at risk for developing metabolic syndrome?
So we definitely see metabolic syndrome becoming more common as people age, particularly when you reach that age of 40 and beyond. However, because we have rising childhood obesity and we have increasingly sedentary lifestyles, we are now seeing earlier signs of the syndrome in the younger populations, even in some of the teenagers. So there are certain populations who are also at higher risk, so people of African, Indian descent, Hispanic descent, and that is largely because of the genetic predisposition coupled with environmental and dietary factors as well. Now, in Trinidad and Tobago, women, particularly after menopause, appear to have the higher rates of metabolic syndrome. And remember, when we talk about menopause, we talk about that estrogen decline. Now, estrogen is cardioprotective. It's protective for our bones. It's protective for our cognitive function as well. And it also is very protective for our blood vessels. So before the age of menopause, a lot of women are heavily reliant on, and they don't even know it, but they are heavily reliant on that estrogen being very protective for them. After menopause, when that estrogen declines, and if you have not been living a proper lifestyle in which you are exercising and eating properly, it is going to catch up to you. And you are definitely going to experience all of these different factors when we're looking at metabolic syndrome. You know, the increasing blood pressure, the increasing insulin resistance, the abdominal waist circumference getting much bigger. And again, that is another thing with women. We tend to store fat in our legs and in our glute area, but after menopause and that loss of estrogen, that fat storage shifts to the abdominal area. So that is just another factor added into developing metabolic syndrome. So again, largely due to these hormonal shifts, lower physical activity levels, and of course that increase in the central obesity. Men tend to develop the metabolic issues earlier, particularly in relation to things like blood pressure and triglycerides. And that variation is going to make it even more important to personalize prevention and treatment approaches based on the demographic risks.
And what are the major lifestyle and genetic factors that contribute to metabolic syndrome?
So I would say that lifestyle factors are definitely the primary drivers of metabolic syndrome. So poor diet, particularly one that is high in the processed foods, the refined carbohydrates, and the sugary beverages, that is going to contribute significantly to the development of metabolic syndrome. A sedentary lifestyle as well, with little to no physical activity, actually worsens insulin resistance, and it's going to promote that fat accumulation around the abdomen. things like smoking, excessive alcohol intake, and chronic stress also play a key role in developing metabolic syndrome. Genetics do influence a person's susceptibility. If you have a family history of type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, or heart disease, sometimes you're more likely to develop metabolic syndrome. Now, we have to remember that having a family inheritance or that inheritance is not equal to destiny. So yes, you can have a family predisposition, but if you have a different lifestyle and you consume the proper foods and you are exercising, more than likely you are not going to develop metabolic syndrome. So again, genetics, load the gun, but environment and our lifestyle is going to pull the trigger on these different things, right? In other words, even if you are genetically predisposed, healthy choices around stress management is going to dramatically reduce your risk of developing metabolic syndrome.
Feels, of course, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. We'll be taking some of your calls in just a short while. Remember, the numbers to call, 623-0106, and WhatsApp us at 343-1061. That's because we are live at Sangeet Studios today. And how does diet, especially sugar and processed food, play a role in this condition?
So I would say that sugar and the processed foods that, I mean, we are all guilty of consuming are the central culprits in the development of metabolic syndrome. So the diets that are high in the refined sugars, and when I'm talking refined sugars, I mean the foods that we consume with lots of sugar in them, the donuts and the cookies and the pastries, and even high fructose corn syrup, these things increase your insulin levels and they promote fat storage within the body, particularly in the liver and around the abdomen. And what we've known, or what we've known for a long time, is that that abdominal fat and that visceral fat is what actually contributes to developing all of these comorbidities and even metabolic syndrome as well. Over time, that is going to lead to insulin resistance, and that is the common denominator across all the components of metabolic syndrome. Now, another myth that a lot of people tend to think about is that all fats are bad. Now, in fact, trans fats and excessive saturated fats that are found in the processed snacks and the fried foods, those are the ones that are harmful. But we have the healthy fats like the avocados and the nuts and the olive oils. Those things can actually be protective in the right amounts. So what matters most is minimizing the processed low nutrient foods, the empty calories, and focusing on the whole nutrient rich meals that are optimal for supporting metabolic function.
All right, 12:32 on time. You listen to The Lunchtime Doctor. And is there also a link between stress and metabolic syndrome?
Yes, I would definitely say that chronic stress is a significant contributor to metabolic syndrome. When the body is under stress, it releases the stress hormone like cortisol and even adrenaline. Now, persistently high cortisol levels leads to things like increased appetite and the cravings for the high sugary and the high fat foods, and even abdominal weight gain. I mean, think about it. If you're under stress, what is the first thing that you crave? Or if you are in a stressful situation, like a lot of traffic and you driving home, what is the first thing that you crave? And if you see a fast food outlet, you automatically just think, this is what I want to eat. And that is because cortisol actually increases your appetite and makes you more susceptible to wanting certain foods. Now, all of these things, if you're consuming all of these foods, and in addition to that, you have a high stressful environment that allows you to release cortisol and adrenaline in large amounts over a few days, that is also going to contribute to the development of metabolic syndrome. many people tend to underestimate the physiological impact of stress. And we tend to think that it only affects our mental health. But in reality, stress actually triggers inflammatory pathways in the body and disrupts our insulin sensitivity. So, you know, just simple stress management techniques like mindfulness and regular exercise and getting that 7 to 8 hours of sleep and even counseling should be considered essential tools, not just luxuries, in preventing and treating metabolic syndrome.
All right, guys, let's take another break to answer some of your questions. Our phone lines, once again, your numbers you're calling today, 623-0106. And, of course, WhatsApp us at 343-1061. Let's see what the WhatsApp has for us today. Hi, good day, Doc. Could you tell me why every time I take vitamins, I get terrible migraines? What is the cause of that?
So, honestly, many different people have many different triggers. So for some people, it may be chocolate. For some people, it may be alcohol. For some people, you know, it may even be that the dose of vitamins that you are taking may be too much stress for your body. So some multivitamins, they advise that you take 2 of the tablets per day. Now, for somebody that is smaller or somebody that is not of a large weight, taking 2 of those may be overdoing it for your body. Because even if you look at the nutritional facts on some of these vitamins, some of them are giving you about 250% or 300% of your daily intake for the day of certain vitamins. So it may be that you are overloading your body with too many vitamins, and that may be triggering a stress response or an inflammatory response in the body as opposed to helping you. So maybe change the brand of vitamin, maybe reduce the dose from 2 to 1 and see how that makes you feel.
Mm-hmm. I had another question coming in here. Good day, doctor. I'm 56 years old. I am having a problem with going off. I have tried everything. I tried fibers, oats, fruits, and vegetables, but nothing works. Thank you.
So, if you are getting a lot of constipation, there are several different things that you can try. So, drinking more water. So, try to increase your daily intake of water from 3.5 to about 4 liters to 5 liters and see if that helps as well. As well as physical activity. So you can be doing a lot of the proper diets. You can be increasing the fiber. And some people think that by eating maybe 1 or 2 meals with fiber is going to help. But in reality, you have to increase your fiber throughout the day. So it can't just be 1 meal you've increased the amount of vegetables you eat. No, it has to be something that is consistent. That in addition to increasing your water intake and your physical activity level as well, that is going to help the mobility of your GI system, and it will help, you know, any sort of stool to pass through your system more easily. Now, if all of this, you've been doing all of this at an optimal level and it still doesn't work, you can go to your physician and there are certain things that they can prescribe for you to take as well. But really and truly, a lot of people tend to neglect how much physical activity can help with their bowel movements.
Dear Doc, I'm a 46-year-old male and sometimes on my pelvic area, I sometimes get buttons. They don't boost or anything, but just sometimes I get some buttons. They sometimes fill with blood. They do, and I sometimes squeeze them, but nothing comes out.
Well, it could just be that it is a rash from maybe something that you're using, or maybe something that you are wearing, something as simple as your laundry detergent for your pants, that could be leading to that. And it could also be that you have hairs all over the body, and that could lead to ingrowns as well. So it could be a cluster of many different things. If it is something that is very debilitating, make sure that you get it checked out, because you don't want it to be an ingrown that gets infected and then you're in a position where you have to be taking antibiotics, etc.
And last question here, Dead Doc. What causes your nails to be dark skin and sometimes broken?
So again, if you have things like a nail infection, that can lead to discoloration of the nails. It could also be due to trauma or injury to the nail, and that could cause what we call a subungual hematoma. That's usually harmless, and the nail may fall off and regrow after some time. Fungal infections is something that we do see commonly, especially in the toenails. That can cause your nails to become dark and thicken and more brittle and develop that yellow-brownish tint. So in that case, you are going to need antifungal treatment, topical or oral, depending on the severity. And sometimes even nutritional deficiencies can lead to discoloration of the nails. So low levels of vitamin B12 or iron can sometimes lead to darker or discolored nails. So it really is about getting to the root cause of the problem and treating that underlying cause.
All right, let's get back to our topic on metabolic syndrome. What are the long-term risk or health risk if this syndrome is not addressed or treated?
So if you do not get any treatment for metabolic syndrome, that leads to serious and sometimes even life-threatening conditions. The most immediate concern is the dramatically increased risk of cardiovascular disease, including things like heart attacks and strokes. Now, over time, if you have persistently high blood sugar, that is going to lead to type 2 diabetes, which by itself is going to bring its own risks, like kidney disease and nerve damage and even vision loss and even amputations for certain people. Now, another long-term consequence that we do see that is often overlooked is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which can progress to liver cirrhosis as well. Metabolic syndrome also increases the risk of certain cancers, and it can reduce a person's life expectancy significantly. So really and truly, think about any complication that can ensue with high cholesterol or high blood sugar or high blood pressure. Any of those complications can ensue with metabolic syndrome. Now, the danger lies in its silent progression. Many people are going to feel fine while the condition quietly damages their organs. So even things like high blood pressure, we call that the silent killer, because people do not experience any sort of symptoms. I mean, in fact, just the other day I was in a company and I was doing blood pressure checking for a lot of the employees. And when I looked at the blood pressures, most of them were in a very detrimental range, and these people are feeling completely fine because they don't know that high blood pressure can have no symptoms.
Yeah, recently I was told a good friend of mine who's a gym instructor, and he's been admitted to the hospital. They want to keep him for a few days because he had high blood pressure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So sometimes a lot of people think if they're doing physical activity alone, that may be enough to offset. And yes, it may reduce your risk of certain diseases, but it is a collaborative effort of your entire lifestyle. It's about managing your diet, managing your physical activity, managing your stress, managing your sleep. All of these things have to work in tandem to dramatically reduce your risk.
Yes, yes. Hello, caller. Hold on. Let's take a call. Hello.
Could you... thing about vertigo.
About?
Vertigo.
Vertigo.
Oh, vertigo.
What causes it and what you could do?
So, really and truly, vertigo is essentially what we call a hallucination of movement. And it can make it feel like the world is tilting or moving when it's not. And really and truly, it's a symptom. It's not actually a disease or diagnosis itself. There are many different causes of vertigo. There's something called BPPV, and that is usually the most common cause, benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, especially in older adults. It's triggered when tiny calcium crystals in the inner ear get dislodged and interfere with balance signals. It typically happens when you move your head or you're rolling over in bed. Now, there are simple maneuvers that your ENT will do or your general physician will do that will help to manage that vertigo. But if you are if you are diagnosed with particular diseases, then there are certain treatments for it. So vertigo is a very big topic, and maybe it's one that we will cover later on this week.
All right, folks, once again, you listen to The Lunchtime Doctor. We're in Sangi Studios today. We're also, of course, as usual, on Freedom 106.5 FM and Sky 99.5, right? Good week with the information. Is metabolic syndrome reversible once diagnosed?
So the good news is that metabolic syndrome is largely reversible, especially when it is addressed early. So lifestyle changes like adopting a healthier diet, increasing your physical activity, and losing the excess weight, and quitting smoking, and of course managing your stress, all of these things can help to reverse the condition and reduce the need for medications. Now, in fact, studies actually show that losing just 5 to 10% of your body weight can significantly improve all the components of metabolic syndrome. However, if it is left untreated for too long, some damage may become permanent. For example, if you have let it progress to the point where you now have type 2 diabetes or heart disease, unfortunately, sometimes the damage from those conditions become permanent. So it is essential that you get early intervention. Now, people think that once you have it, you're stuck with it for life, but that is untrue. Your body is remarkably capable of healing when given the right environment. So even when I am seeing my patients and the first time they come to me and they have a blood pressure of, say, 130 on 80-something, the goal is not to put you on medication. The goal is to reverse this. In fact, lifestyle factors like diet and exercise is the first line of treatment for these things. So once we get your lifestyle, your diet and your exercise in check, you will not or may not have to go on medication, because most people, when they do go on medication, they're on medication for the rest of their lives.
And how would someone know if they have metabolic syndrome? Are there any warning signs?
So most people with metabolic syndrome, they don't have the obvious symptoms, and that is why it often goes undiagnosed. However, I mean, there are subtle clues that you can look out for. If your waistline is expanding, if you feel extremely tired after meals, if you have frequent sugar cravings, if you have elevated blood pressure during routine checkups, if you have dark patches of skin around the neck or the armpits, we call that acanthosis nigricans, that usually indicates insulin resistance. So the key message here is that regular screening is crucial. Waiting for symptoms may be too late. Routine measurements of your waist circumference, your blood pressure, your fasting blood glucose, your lipid levels, especially if you are over the age of 35 or you have a family history of chronic diseases, that can help us catch metabolic syndrome early and improve your outcomes in the long run.
And what tests or screenings are typically done to confirm a diagnosis?
So to diagnose metabolic syndrome, what we would usually do is order a panel of tests that include, of course, your fasting blood glucose, your lipid profile, which will measure your triglycerides, your LDL and your HDL cholesterol, and check your blood pressure and your waist circumference. Some doctors may also use insulin sensitivity testing, or they may calculate your BMI as a supporting measure. But of course, BMI can be something that can be taken out of context for certain people. Now, no single test by itself can confirm metabolic syndrome, but it's the combination of all these values that actually matters. And that is why it's important to look at the full picture, not just the isolated numbers. For example, a normal blood sugar does not rule out the risk if your waistline and your blood pressure are elevated. It is a holistic diagnosis, and it is going to require an integrated approach.
All right, folks, 11 minutes away from 12 o'clock. We will still take a couple calls in between, or messages, so you could still send your messages to 343-1061 or 623-0106. We're live from Sangate Studios. Of course, we're still live on Freedom 106.15 FM and Sky 99.5. All right, we're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor as we talk about the metabolic syndrome. All right, another question coming in here. What are some realistic steps people can take to prevent or manage metabolic syndrome?
So I always like to say that consistency is better than intensity. So if you are doing something small but consistent every day, that is better than doing a 2-hour workout one day for the week and eating good for one day for the week. You know, over time, these small, consistent actions are going to pay off a lot more than just being intense for one day and being dedicated for one day. So incorporate more physical activity into your daily routine. So something like spare 30 minutes a day for brisk walking 5 days a week, that can make a huge difference. Remember, we always recommend 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise for the week to help with your cardiovascular health. So breaking that down into 30 minutes a day instead of doing all 150 for one day is going to have a better outcome for you and for your body. Shift your diet towards the whole, the unprocessed foods like the vegetables and the lean proteins like the chicken breast or the fish or the eggs. And the healthy fats, like I mentioned before, the avocados and the nuts, and even your complex carbohydrates like the oats and the sweet potato and the ground provisions. And of course, reduce the amount of sugar and salt intake and avoid all the sugary beverages that we are seeing nowadays. And increase your water consumption. So instead of drinking juice 3 times for the day, maybe you can have 1 cup of juice for the day and the rest of the time you drink water. Sleep is often something that we also overlooked. So you want to aim for 7 to 9 hours of quality sleep per night. And that is because when you are sleeping, your body is basically regenerating itself. It's replenishing itself. It is reducing your cortisol levels. All of these things are essential to carry out your daily activities. Managing your stress as well. Deep breathing exercises, mindfulness, talking to a therapist. These things do play a huge role. And I feel like a lot of people still underestimate the value of something like mindfulness or even just talking. Now, these are the realistic steps that don't require a gym membership or a personal chef, just commitment to better habits one day at a time.
Yeah. All right. Hello, good afternoon, my friend.
This boy, Doc. Mm-hmm. I'm hustling to ask you this question, Doc. Baking soda. I read so much about this baking soda. Is it good? And if it is good, how do you use it? Thanks again.
So the thing about baking soda, it is it's one of those old school household items, you know, that we usually will have on hand, it can be good for you, but of course in moderation and for the right purposes. Baking soda is what we call an alkaline compound, so it neutralizes acid and it does offer some medicinal and hygiene related benefits. Now, for some people, they say that for acid reflux, it will help. So having half a teaspoon in a glass of water could provide some quick relief, but this is not something that you can do daily because it is going to disrupt your natural stomach acid balance and even raise your blood pressure because of sodium and bloating. It does help have some sort of dental, advantages as well. In toothpaste or as a mild rinse will help to freshen the breath, reduce the bacteria. Now, I don't recommend it as an internal remedy. So having a long-term or excessive use of that could lead to what we call metabolic alkalosis, meaning that you have a serious imbalance in your blood pH, and that will cause high sodium levels and even kidney strain as well. You want to avoid using baking soda if you have high blood pressure, kidney disease, and on a sodium-restricted diet. And I just want to put out there, it is not a cure for cancer or infections or chronic diseases. There's a lot of dangerous misinformation that is circulating online. So yes, it can be useful in the right context, but it is not a miracle cure.
Mm-hmm. All right, and back to the metabolic syndrome. Can metabolic syndrome be managed with lifestyle changes alone, or is medication sometimes needed?
So in many cases, especially early on, metabolic syndrome can be effectively managed with lifestyle changes alone. So diet, exercise, weight loss, and stress reduction are definitely powerful tools. However, if the lifestyle modifications are not enough to bring risk factors under control, or if somebody has already developed type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, then of course medications may be necessary. That said, medication should support, not replace, your lifestyle changes. A common myth is that once you start your medication, there's no point in improving your lifestyle. That is completely false. Medications can help to stabilize certain components, but your long-term success and prevention of any complications is going to be dependent on the sustainable behavioral changes.
Okay, and finally, what advice do you have for listeners who may be at risk or living with this common condition right now?
So I would say that my biggest piece of advice is, do not wait until you feel unwell to take any sort of action. You're supposed to go to the doctor when you are feeling well so that you can optimize your health for proper longevity and you can age in good health. Metabolic syndrome can silently damage your health for years before the symptoms even appear. So having your annual checkup is definitely important to put you on the right track for longevity. If you know that you have risk factors like a family history or a sedentary lifestyle, or you're carrying some extra weight around your midsection, it is time to take charge now. Go and get yourself screened. Talk to your doctor. Start making the appropriate changes. Also, I would say don't be discouraged by that term syndrome. It is not a death sentence. It's more of a wake-up call. And it's a chance to reverse the course of actions that can take place if you leave it untreated. It is a chance to reverse your risk of developing the very serious and the dire consequences like the heart attack and the stroke. Now, with the proper knowledge, the proper support, and the small but the consistent actions, you can reclaim your health and, of course, prevent those future complications. Your body is something that wants to heal. It is important that you give it the appropriate tools that it needs to heal itself.
right, folks, of course, another edition of the Lunchtime Doctor. We wrap up with any other questions. So in terms of this condition, Doctor, referring again, what are some of the symptoms so that people who probably checked in late and got it may just know?
So metabolic syndrome more than likely does not have any symptoms in its early stages. What you may find is that you may notice that you're getting a little more weight around the midsection. You're feeling extremely exhausted and tired after consuming. You have more of a craving for the sugary, high processed foods. These are some of the things that we would usually see in people who are developing metabolic syndrome. If you've had an elevated blood pressure during your routine checkups, and of course the dark patches of skin or the acanthosis nigricans around the neck or the armpits, this usually indicates insulin resistance. So these are just some of the things that you can look out for. But again, most people only develop symptoms when it has reached to that point where you get, type 2 diabetes or a heart attack or a stroke.
All right, so check it out before it's too late. Well, thank you there very much, Doctor, and catch you tomorrow.
Catch you tomorrow.
All right. Folks, you've been listening to another edition of our Lunchtime Doctor, kicking off the week. Great. Do take care of your health. Remember, your health is your wealth. And tune in, tell a friend to tell a friend to check us out right here. Mondays to Wednesdays, Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Brittany Dean on Sangit 106.1 FM, Sky 99, Freedom 106.5. Do enjoy the rest of your day.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.